This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Ball Factory, a Japanese eatery and coffee shop at 95 Montrose Avenue in East Williamsburg. Learn more at brooklynballfactory.com.
Hey there, HRN listeners. This is Harry Rosenblum, host of Feast Your Ears. I know that news about COVID-19 and the coronavirus has made a lot of people nervous about getting sick. This collective unease has already had a big impact on our restaurant and food communities, especially in New York's Chinatowns. We hope that now more than ever, our listeners will join us in supporting restaurants and the hospitality industry at large. Many of the restaurants we love are small, independent businesses. That means that even one or two bad weeks can put them in jeopardy of cutting staff, limiting hours, or even having to close for good. As long as we're still able, we should go out to eat and support our favorite restaurants. I think it's also great to remember that hospitality professionals are really good at hygiene and food safety practices. Long before there were guides all over the news about how to properly wash your hands, they were already experts at hygiene. Guests' health is tantamount to successful hospitality in any restaurant. And even if you don't want to go out, you can still support restaurants by ordering delivery, buying gift cards, and giving them some extra love on social media. What better way to handle a crisis than by supporting those in our own community? If we don't support them now, they might not be there when this crisis is over. Join HRN in supporting restaurants during this time, especially our friends in Chinatowns around the country. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Yannick Benjamin. We'll talk to Yannick about Wheeling Forward, wine, wine on wheels, and Contento. A lot of exciting stuff going on. We'll taste, believe it or not, some wines Yannick brought back from Israel, of all places. And we'll talk about that trip. I'm your host, Sam Ben-Ruby. Stay with us for The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Born straight out of Hell's Kitchen to immigrant parents, Yannick Benjamin is a sommelier in his native New York. Yannick refused to let a life-changing accident alter his dreams of college and his love of wine. He is the co-founder and director of development for Wheeling Forward and their event Wine on Wheels coming up in New York City on Saturday, April 4th. Yannick is soon to open his new restaurant, Contento, a groundbreaking, barrier-free space in Harlem. Yannick, welcome back to the Grape Nation. And just so you know, I'll have you on anytime. Every Wheeling Forward, I mean, every Wine on Wheels, any restaurant opening, you just email me and say, what's up? And I'm going to go, no, what's up with you?
Well, Sam, thank you very, very much for those kind words. And thank you for your friendship. And thank you for having me back. It really means a lot.
All right, so let's get started. I would say that a lot has gone on since we last spoke, which was a few years ago.
That's correct.
I was excited and anxious to have you on then, and it's truly one of the more interesting Grape Nations.
Thank you.
Before we get into what you've been up to, I want you to remind people, and you know, I feel funny asking, but it's so who you are and what you do. Remind people about, quickly, this life, and I don't mean to...
No, it's okay, please.
About this life-changing,
sure,
you know, incident that happened to you that really shaped the person that you are today, who you are, what you do, and all of that. And I think if people don't know, they'll understand everything we'll be talking about.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, exactly what you said in the intro, born and raised in New York. My whole family was in the restaurant business, so I followed their lead. Pretty much from an early age, I had already dedicated myself, said this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Did not ever think about trying to do something else. So it was just restaurant, food. And then at the age of 25 years old, I was in a car accident that left me permanently paralyzed from the waist down. And so, yes, obviously what was life-altering was that I lost the use of my legs and how I was going to get around, you know, dealing with broken elevators, trying to go to someone's house, but they live in a five-story walk-up.
Stuff you took for granted.
Took stuff that I took for granted. You know, right. Things that go, you know, that are very important. And so I had to really regroup. And all of a sudden now, what I thought was going to be my career, now all of a sudden I had to try to figure out, like, was I going to stay in the hospitality industry, or did I need to go back to school and you know, figure out, you know, something else? And through, I would say, through an incredible amount of support from family and friends, I was able to continue my pursuit of this dream of being involved with the hospitality industry. It was hard. It certainly was not easy. And there were a lot of bumps, a lot of obstacles. But I made it through. And I only made it through because of that support, because of that network of friends and family and that love and that care and that support. Because without it, I would not be able to be where I'm at right now.
Emotionally, you ever doubt things? Like, this is, how am I going to do this? And even with support and a great family?
Of course. And, you know, sometimes people try to tell you things and they're trying to help you. And sometimes, you know, the way you take it can be kind of negative.
Right.
And so, you know, the hardest part is not allowing yourself to fall into like that dark place, that deep hole. And it doesn't take a whole lot, because once you're in that dark place, you know, that deep hole, it's hard to get out. And, you know, that was a constant battle those first few years. And
you never got that deep, though.
I never, thank God.
Because of people and your own, inner strength. Correct. You were able to kind of stay above
that. I mean, I felt, you know, I went through bouts of, like, where I was fighting. You know, I was in round one, round two, but I never got knocked out. But it could have easily have happened, and it could still happen, but luckily,
Hard with Heidi around.
Yes, correct. That's correct. No, and, you know, having Heidi around and having her in my life like that, it just makes it so much easier. And then having great parents, that's also important.
Right. Who, you know, your dad, is he still in the business or are you retired?
No, he's retired, but he's still.
But I mean, you know, that's an example to you to the end, 100%. Right? You know,
he retired at 66.
Yeah. So you do finish college.
Right.
Right. You get out of college with your eye towards hospitality.
Correct.
And the race is on. You know, listen to the last show for all of that stuff. But let's talk about the last couple of years. Kind of buzz through that with me, you know, what you're doing.
Sure.
And, you know, that kind of leads to Wheeling Forward.
Sure.
And Wine on Wheels in the restaurant. But we'll talk more about, each individual thing. But tell me, just give me an update.
Yeah, so prior to 2013, my full-time job, I was doing retail. I was working in the West Village under a gentleman named Jean-Luc Ledoux, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago unexpectedly. And, you know, as much as I appreciated the opportunity to work in that store, because it opened up so many doors for me, it's what I needed to do, I still really had this incredible desire to go work in restaurants and be with, you know, clients and actually opening up the bottles of wine and all that kind of stuff. And I did many, many sommelier competitions, which I encourage all young aspiring sommeliers, or those that don't even want to work in restaurants or work in retail, that they should do it. It's a great place to network, and it's a great training ground. I really do. But I did that, and one of the judges happened to be the general manager at a private club that I work at now called the University Club, Mr. John Dorman. And we reconnected a few years after, and I had forgotten that he was actually one of the judges. So when I went into interview, the interview lasted only 2 minutes. And I was thoroughly convinced by this. You know, my accident was in 2003. The interview was in 2013. We're talking about 10 years. And I had already gone to many interviews in restaurants where I just got rejected, or there was always some kind of excuse. And he just looked at me and he said, you don't remember me? And I said, no, I don't. He said, I was one of your judges. He said, do you want to work here? And I said,
so he made the decision on the spot.
Right on the spot.
You're in.
And then he just asked me, he said, are there any accommodations that I can make for you to make it easier? And I didn't even know how to answer that, because no one had ever asked me that.
Right.
And so it was kind of a weird thing. And I said, well, can I think about it? And I'll get back to you. And I never really did anyway. But he was very instrumental. He was completely, him hiring me, him being part of my life, completely changed my life. It was unbelievable.
So I would say, taking the story, Ledoux, and Dorman were two you know, major guys.
100%.
Now, you know, the University Club is this big, amazing space with this, you know, fancy clientele and, you know, restaurant and wine cellar and all that. Big floor, right? Big space. So before we move off of that, you sort of innovated something to make you get around and offer wine service, you know, in a wheelchair and all of that.
Correct. Actually, this gentleman, Jean-Paul Violet, who owns this fantastic, he's a carpenter out here who makes some of the best furniture, and he was buying wine, and we got to talking. I said, listen, I'm looking for a tray that I can put glasses on, bottles of wine, but I want it to look good. I want it to be pretty. And we worked on it throughout the years, and now I've got something that's unbelievable. And he's another guy. Talk about Jean-Luc and Mr. Dorman. He's one, you know, he's in that kind of like that holy trinity, you know.
He solved something very major that...
You know, what may seem like a small thing for someone is a huge thing, you know, for myself. It goes a long way, and it has allowed me up to now to do competitions, to take exams, to serve people the way that I need to serve them. And so, incredible.
All right, so we're going to do a couple things here. We're going to talk about one thing and then jump ahead and kind of finish this chain that we're on. Because I think the next thing, obviously, is at some point you meet Alex and, well, you met Alex.
Right.
You start wheeling forward.
Yes.
But I want to save that. But one of the things, you know, and I follow you and, you know, we are friends. I've seen an amazing amount of travel that you've put in the last 12, 15 months to me. It's breathtaking, and it's almost impossible to keep up with you. And, you know, not to dwell on the topic, but, you know, it's you're talking about a guy who goes down into wine cellars and into vineyards, and, you know, you don't let anything, you know, hold you back. Correct. So let's talk about the last 3-4 trips, because I think the last trip you were in is Israel, so we'll talk about that last. But let's talk about, you know, some of the highlights and places that you went and why, and, you know.
Of course. Just a year ago, I was in New Zealand. I was out there for a little bit over 2 weeks, and it was incredible.
Why book the trip to New Zealand? What, you wanted to try cooler Pinots, you didn't know much about? I mean, what was the...
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I had, you know, listen, I'm curious about everything, and I want to check it out. I want to understand it. I want to understand the culture. But for the longest time, you know, this small island nation, or these two island, you know, I mean, there's two islands, the North and the South Island, this 5 million people, how they've had this major impact on the American market with wines. And I think their Pinots are stunning. I think their Chardonnays are stunning. The Sauvignon Blancs that I had from smaller growers, like, blew me away. Some fabulous Syrahs and some Bordeaux blends. I think it's an incredible place. And from north to south, how incredibly different the geology changes, the landscape changes, and just the people are different too, which is really cool. But one thing that does not change amongst them is how incredibly kind and generous. It's just really the nicest people. And I loved every minute of it.
So you were impressed with the wines?
Oh,
I mean, you talk about
high quality.
You're still drinking, you know, New Zealand Pinots.
Yes, I mean, I don't work for New Zealand.
I know.
But the quality is unbelievable. Yes,
you would recommend them. Did anything? You know, I always hate to put people on the spot, and sometimes you feel like you're excluding people. But are there one or two makers or wines that, you know, just caught your attention?
I will say this, so I don't, like, you know.
Okay, but that's what I was trying to avoid.
I mean, one region that really blew me away was the Martinborough area. It's in the southern part of the North Island, and they focus on Pinot Noir.
So look for Martinborough as a region for Pinot.
Yeah, they dig totally
in for the better makers, and you're going to hit good wines.
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, I definitely Central Otago. You know,
OTAGO, Central Otago.
They,
Pinot's there too, right?
Pinot's, and Chardonnays, Riesling. And listen, Marlborough, even though it has this reputation.
That's the old Sauvignon.
But we went out there, me and Heidi, and we loved it. A lot of small growers out there that are overshadowed by some of the bigger producers, and nothing wrong with them, but some really good stuff happening out there. Some good Chardonnays out there as well, some Pinot Gris and some Pinot Noir, obviously, out there. So good stuff happening, no doubt about it.
So give me... You know, New Zealand, right around the corner, easy trip, 2 weeks, no big deal. Right?
Exactly.
All right, so give me another trip, next trip.
So the next trip went out to France right after that in May, and that was in We did Champagne, Chablis, Burgundy. But while we were in Burgundy, we did the whole Côte d'Or, the Côte Chalonnaise, into Beaujolais, and then the Mâconnais, yeah.
So you covered a lot.
We covered a lot of ground, yeah, in about 2 weeks.
And Champagne, you try to get to as many producers as you could?
Yeah, the one producer we spent a lot of time was with François Huré, H-U-R-E.
Right. Aigle Huré?
No. This different. This is François and then Huré, H-U-R-E.
Oh, I'm thinking, yeah. You know what I'm thinking. Yeah,
and
O-U.
Huré, Frère et Fils, and those Champagnes, I mean... I knew of them, I've had them, but actually spending time there and really understanding their philosophy was unbelievable. I thought they crushed it.
Were you at smaller growers and big houses or mostly with the...
We actually visited Renard too, so right. Huré was a complete opposite spectrum of that to Renard. And
it's good for you to,
it's great,
while you're
of
there.
Course, that's, and you should do that. You know. And then we went to Chablis. And, you know, we always, every year, we were in Chablis for the last 6 or 7 years, and we always visit Domaine Christian Moreau, who is a good friend of ours, and he's just an unbelievable gentleman, and we always have great visits. And then one of my favorite wineries out there, too, besides him, is Domaine Pinson.
Spell?
P-I-N-S-O-N.
P-I-N-S-O-N. Pinson.
Yeah, up and coming, and okay. They've been around for a long time, but I think they're making their market presence
expensible?
Felt.
Expensive or reasonable?
No, you can find some really
good. Okay, so that's a good thing to
very,
look for.
Very, very, very affordable, yeah.
Then you get to Burgundy. Burgundy's crazy because of all the... I mean, you probably picked who you wanted to see.
I mean, we went to visit a small producer called Chantreves. Small,
very, very hot right now.
Very hot.
Chantreves.
Yes.
Yeah, very hot now. And good value.
Unbelievable.
You were impressed with the wines?
Oh yeah, I think. And I you know, first off, they're the people that are behind it. The couple, you know, Tomoko and her husband, nicest people in the world. They're only starting. They're just like, you know, they're just hitting their stride. I can't wait to see them in another few years. But what they're doing is incredible. Right around the corner from them, we went to visit Domaine Bees. With Chiesa Bees, B-I-Z-E, and she, which was really cool because the winemaker at both properties are overseen are both Japanese,
which is for Burgundy.
It's unbelievable, and they're the nicest can be, and just
yeah, Chiesa is sort of becoming a mini legend there.
Yeah.
And she was just in New York for La Palais, which is a big Burgundy festival, correct. Which you participated in. So you really got to handpick. And spend time with what are important.
Exactly. I'm very blessed because Becky Wasserman and her team are very generous with me. They're very kind. They support, you know, all my initiatives with Wheeling Forward. But I can contact them and they'll do their best to try to get me some appointments. So I'm very, very blessed in that fact. Very lucky.
All right. So that's a big trip. Do you go anywhere else besides before Israel or Israel's next?
Trying to think.
Oh, wait. Didn't you say Northern Italy?
I was in Northern Italy in November. I was in Oregon, too, after that. Some great producers too, you know, Mimi Castell, who's doing some really fantastic
stuff. What's her son, Ben, or is it Ben?
No. Her family is from the Castile family, and I'm trying, Bethel Heights.
Right.
And then she went off to do her own thing.
Right.
And she's doing some really fabulous stuff. And then, of course, we went to visit Larry Stone over at Lingua Franca. And those wines are just absolutely dynamite.
It's a collaboration with...
with Dominique Lafon.
Right.
Yes, I mean, exactly.
Kind of Larry and Dominique, right?
No, it's a pretty good combo. And Larry's just...
Beautiful
wines. Yeah, beautiful wines. And they're killing it out right now in the Willamette Valley.
The Oregon and Willamette... In general, it's sort of a hot spot, right?
It's a total hot spot, yeah.
I mean, those are wines to look for.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, absolutely. And then you can still find some fairly good value. And then actually, just prior to that, we were out in the southwest of France. So all the off-the-beaten stuff, Madiron, Armagnac, the Jurançon, Cahors. So we visited some really cool stuff out there. And you want to talk about wines that over-deliver for the price and really the quality. It's really that's Southwest. People need to start paying attention.
Yeah. I mean, we could do a show on Cahors or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you mentioned a lot of things, but you're right about that. I mean, those are regions with some great producers.
I love it.
All right. Then
in November was Northern Italy, and I did the Alto Adige. I visited Hofstadter. I spent a lot of time there with him, drove around a very spectacular place in the Alto Adige, some incredible terroir, just a beautiful place. If anyone can ever have a chance to drive up north, please do so. And then Friuli, I was out there for a couple of days, and I loved that.
Great whites up there.
Yeah, some really great whites, some really good reds, some good Refosco out there too, you know. Right. And then had a great visit with Quintarelli and Valpolicella. That was pretty wild too. Very cool. One of the most beautiful cellars I've ever been to.
Quintarelli is, you know, the guy, right?
I mean, they are definitely the king of the Verona Hills. Yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. There's no, I mean, and their stuff is just spectacular. I mean,
and then you go to Israel, right?
And then I go to Israel. I went to Israel in, I just got back. I mean, the first 2 weeks of February.
What was the thinking there? Was it a wine focus thing? Was it a mixture of,
you know,
what Israel as a land offers, and there's a wine scene there?
I mean, I'm very good friends with this family that loves wine. And they're deeply passionate about Israeli culture and Israeli wine and food. And we just got to talking. And I said, well, if you ever go to Israel, I want to come with you because, you know, I want to follow.
Big ding, ding, we're going to Israel.
And then all of a sudden, that's what happened. And they're like, and so we just traveled with them. And they know Israel like the back of their hand because Ari Hochberg, who actually owns Israeli Wine Direct, it's an importer, right? But we went there just as friends. And him and his wife, they just took me and Heidi along, and we just had this incredible ride through, you know, went through the Dead Sea, went to the Golan Heights. It was just, yeah, it was just spectacular all around, you know, the old city in Jerusalem. And so it's just a spectacular place. I mean, the Middle East is just, you know.
It's nothing like it.
There's nothing like it.
You know, there's so much going on.
Yeah.
I mean, between, you know, Christianity, Judaism, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, the Arab culture, Palestine, it's just, you know, and then you throw wine in and all of that. Towards the end of the show, we're going to talk about and taste a couple of the wines.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing because you have a lot of stuff going on, you're kind of you're staying put for a little bit for now.
I'm staying put. I mean, I was supposed to go to Italy for Vin Italy, but that
bad idea.
A bad idea, obviously. Yeah. Which, it, you know, went in a long run, it like works out for me because I should be staying put,
right.
And you know, I've got a lot of projects on
I'm
my
happy
hand.
To hear that.
Yeah, thank you.
Because people, but when we're done with the interview, they'll know why. Like, this guy was going to Italy, he's nuts.
But you
are anyway. But all right, so that leads me. So we jumped to travel because I think that was a big part of your life and in the last year, and you know, you really took in a lot of stuff. But I think one of the things that's an important part of your life and is top of mind right now because of things going on is an organization you started called Wheeling Forward.
Correct.
Tell everyone quickly, you know, how Wheeling Forward came about.
Yeah.
Not that long ago. Was it 2013?
Yeah. 2012. Right. Yeah. So right there. I was injured in 2003, did my rehabilitation for about 3-4 months over at Mount Sinai Hospital on the Upper East Side. And my roommate happened to be this gentleman, Alex Alagudin, who we're now best friends. And he was in a separate car accident. He's a quadriplegic, so he's paralyzed from the chest down. I'm paralyzed from the waist down. And we just befriended each other. We have very similar kind of family backgrounds, only he's Russian, I'm French. But we noticed that we had this incredible, you know, support of family and friends always coming to visit us. But the other patients on the same floor with us, no one was visiting them.
So that side story is like, whoa.
Like even though we
feel for these guys.
Yeah, even though we were going through this whole life alternative, you know, kind
of. So were they.
So they
without family.
But without family. Right. And they had these anxieties that we did not, because they were not going home. They didn't know what was happening. They didn't have the resources to do simple home modifications. Some of them lived on 5-story walk-ups. So they were going to nursing homes. And we're like, what? Like, this is not fair. Like, how is this even possible? And so we knew that we needed, like, when we were going to leave rehabilitation, that we're going to take our time, get our lives back together, and then eventually maybe start something. And then in 2012, we felt that the time was right. He had got, you know, he went to school. He's a lawyer, filled out all the paperwork to become a 501c3, which is a nonprofit. And that's what happened. And we went to work. We went at it.
And you started the organization.
And
it's a simple mission statement, to help people that were recently, for all the things you said,
exactly.
Maybe didn't have support or needed immediate attention, to getting into their apartment.
We want to support people, especially, no one ever taught, it's all about the cure, and we support that initiative, but what about the now and quality of life? You know, you know, maybe someone doesn't have the financial resources to put grab bars, or they need a fix up on their wheelchair, things of that nature. And that's what it's all about. That's what we really want to focus on. That's what we're trying to focus on. So yeah.
So those are the programs.
And we have a bunch of programs.
Right. I mean, a couple worth mentioning.
Yeah, of course. You know, absolutely.
I mean, everything we just discussed falls into that stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have two wellness and physical fitness centers, one in Brooklyn, one up in Harlem. It's a great place for people with disabilities to go to. They can go work out. All the equipment is adaptive, but then also be amongst their peers, which is also great.
Right. And then, you know, knowing you not being able to sit on your hands, you had to put some kind of wine aspect to this, right? You know, to wheeling forward. So you develop this concept that is uber successful and uber brilliant. Let's talk about wine on wheels.
Yeah, no, it's a, you know, listen, you know, a lot of this was just inspiration from like industry grand tastings, from people like Daniel Jonas, who started this all, and all that. And then, you know, I just kind of took that concept and then, you know, created something a bit different. But, you know, that's where the inspiration came from. And so started Wine on Wheels because we needed to, in order for us to be a nonprofit, you need money, right? Without money, you can't really do much, unfortunately. You know, you can hug people, you can give people words of encouragement, but sometimes you need that money to actually make a difference, unfortunately. That's just the reality of it. And so on our first one, we were able to get the space donated. We were able to get all the wines donated. All the sommeliers, all the retail partners, they all came through, all got involved. Super generous, not just of product, but of their time. And that's how it all began, and that's where we're at right now.
And let's get a little more specific. So which number of Wine on Wheels is coming up in April?
This is our 9th one, actually, yeah.
All right, so we're talking New York, because, yes. You know, let's right. talk about New York, because that's kind correct. Of in front of us.
Yes.
And then we'll talk about other cities past and coming, sure, and, you know,
sure,
the future.
Sure.
So on April 4th, which is a Saturday, mm-hmm. from what time, from when to when?
It starts at 12 and ends at 4 o'clock. It's right. an afternoon grand tasting. We do have a master seminar. There's some tickets available.
There's some, you yeah. could go in and learn stuff.
Yeah, and that's with Arvid Rosengren.
Who is, you yeah, know, another whiz.
Best sommelier in the world. Yeah, 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 partner at Legacy Records. Right. And he's going to do something on the Iberian Peninsula. So we've got things of that nature. And we have fast track seminars during the actual grand tasting. So some really cool stuff.
So you could duck out and listen to a quick
fast
track.
Yeah, just want to chill out. And Aldo Sam is doing one of them. You know, Lisa Granick, Master of Wine. She's doing another one. You know, so we've got some a really cool lineup of people.
So you said earlier, so it's at City Winery.
Yes.
City Winery, Lisa, recently
yeah.
moved.
Yeah.
It's City Winery, New York. I think it's 25 11th Avenue at 15th Street.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's, you know, it was pretty far west, but now it's way west.
Yeah.
Are tickets and opportunities still available?
Oh, absolutely.
I know you have like an early entry VIP sure. and yeah, all yeah, that stuff. Sure. We'll do it now. We'll do it later. If people want more information, the best thing is to go online.
Yeah, just go on wineonwheels.org.
.org.
Yeah, wineonwheels.org.
Okay. And I think one of the fun things for most people is there's a walk-around grand tasting.
That's correct.
And that's all the wines that you've worked hard, you know, to get donated and all
that's
that.
That's correct.
But the amazing thing is you go up to a table and maybe there is... you know, wines from a port. Becky Wasserman picked right. a bunch of wine. And standing behind there is like Dustin Wilson and
right.
Arvid Rose.
Right,
you know,
right, right.
You've been able to wrangle the best Psalms to,
yeah.
you know, help you with this. So people should know that that's an experience, you know,
it's fun.
In itself.
Exactly.
So you can taste wines, there's the seminars, and then another source of revenue, which is...
We have the silent auction. We have about over 50 different lots. It's a great opportunity to get some great bottles of wine for a good price, to be quite honest with
and
you.
And a good cause.
And for a good... Yep, exactly. And then also we have our live auction. We have three different auction items that we push, and that goes over really well. So keep your eyes open for that.
And I'm hoping... I think I know the answer, but each year the lots, there were more lots and better stuff. And,
yeah, exactly.
And,
correct.
And all of that.
Correct.
All right, so that's Wine on Wheels in New York coming up Saturday, April 4th. And that's, you know, I reached out to Yannick probably a month ago and I said, boy, we haven't spoken in a while.
Mm-hmm.
You have an event coming up. you know, any way I can help. So we're here talking about that.
Thank you.
Now, you've done it in how many other cities?
So we just did one in January of 2020 in Chicago, which was incredible. We had
good market for that?
Great market.
Okay.
Incredible market. We had such...
You'll go back?
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. And that, like, the first one there was, it was very strong. Exceeded my expectations. Last year, in August of last year, we did one in Portland. So we'll try to do that every few years in Portland. And that was very... That was cool. It was chill. We had a lot of growers from the Willamette Valley. Great group of people, and definitely want to do that again. And then we're doing a third one out in Washington, D.C., still making slow progress out there organically, but a great market, too. We love D.C.
as well. I think D.C. is a good market.
We love D.C.
Upscale, wine collectors, intelligent.
I guess we're just still trying to find our niche out, you know, but we're
So you're determined to make D.C.
Oh, yeah, I love D.C. Absolutely, yeah, it's a great market.
After New York, just before we stop talking about it, is there anything scheduled after New York, or there's a break until then?
No, there's on May 7th, we are going to do an event called Alvarinho Alvarinho, which is an event that we work alongside with Patrick Mata, who's the owner of Ole Obrigado, and that'll be over at Tribeca Grill, and it's a tasting. It's the only exclusive tasting of Alvarinhos from all over the world, not just from Maria Espaixas. Obviously, most of them will be from that region, but you know, you've got Alvarinho from upstate New York, you've got California.
You got the category covered.
Yeah, so it's
So Alvarinho, you and I would agree, is a good summer wine.
Great summer
and
wine.
And this thing is timed. Be silly to do it in the middle of the winter.
Yeah.
So it's timed. So if you're looking, if you're tired of that big name Marlboro Sauvignon Blanc or the crappy whites, this would be a fun thing to explore. That's the whole reason you're doing it, right?
Some fabulous stuff. But, you know, the versatility on Alvarinho is unbelievable. You know, and there's styles that can be rich. So you can have some of them in the wintertime. But, yes, you know, definitely with some shellfish.
Yeah, well, all wine. Yeah, I mean, rosé isn't but
definitely,
for a summer.
But yeah.
But it's definitely worth
low in alcohol. It's just a balanced wine. It's beautiful.
Information on that, where would you go? Wineonwheels.org?
Yeah, so some information will be... It's not posted up yet.
Okay.
But it'll come up as okay. Well. Yeah, for sure.
We'll remind people of that. All right, Yannick, we have to take a quick break.
Sure.
When we come back... We still have a lot of stuff to do. I want to talk to you about Contento, which I think is an interesting project, and I want to hear about it.
Absolutely.
I want to see if we could squeeze in the wine list and get your answers, maybe compare them to yours from 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I want to taste some of these wines, which are interesting, and grateful for you for bringing them in.
Yes.
We're talking to Yannick Benjamin. As you can see at this point, Yannick's got a lot of stuff going on. This is Sam Ben Ruby from The Grape Nation. We'll be right back and find out more from Yannick.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Ball Factory, a Japanese eatery and coffee shop at 95 Montrose Avenue in East Williamsburg. Brooklyn Ball Factory uses the best ingredients to make Japanese comfort food, like their bento boxes featuring meatballs, grilled veggies, Japanese fried chicken, or pork shabu shabu. Plus, visit Brooklyn Ball Factory's sister restaurants, Momo Sushi Shack, Samurai Papa, Samurai Mama, Bozu, and Kitade Shokudo. Learn more at brooklynballfactory.com.
All right, we're back. We're back with my guest, sommelier Yannick Benjamin. Yannick, you are involved in a very interesting project.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the throes of opening a restaurant.
Correct.
And it's up in Harlem.
That's correct, yeah.
And I want to talk about that. But there's two things about Soms that I've kind of realized doing this show. They want to get off the floor. And they either want to make wine.
Right.
Or, you know, they want to own their own place.
Right.
Now, you've done a lot of different things. I mean, Wheeling Forward enough is enough for, you know, any one guy. What was the compulsion? You know, why?
Right.
Why? I wouldn't say complicate your life, because I don't think you're a guy that looks at things as complications. No. But why add more?
Well, you know, I'm 42 years old, but as long as I can, I want to be able to work to four. I'm an active guy. I'm an athlete. I do marathons. So that issue of me working the floor, it's just not a problem for me.
That feeds you.
It feeds me. I know people.
And you're in the window where it's still exciting.
So
let's go.
I love every minute. I mean, I work at the university club. I'm on the floor there, and it never gets boring. Of course, I have my days where I just don't want to work. I mean, Who doesn't? But in general, it's something that I absolutely adore. I love human contact. So that it's so important for me to be on the floor. And I think, you know, through the years, as I was still having this obsession of wanting to get back on the restaurant floor, I would have people tell me, you know, Yannick, like, the only way for you to ever work on the restaurant floor again is for you to open up your own place and have it built around you. And then it always stuck with me, and I kind of, like, you know, developed a little chip on my shoulder, I think in the best possible way. But, you know, I always thought that I was going to do something. But, of course, you know, it's New York City. It's super expensive, and it's very challenging. And I started looking around, keeping my eyes open, and of course with the support of my wife, Heidi, and all that. And I ran into this guy, a friend of a friend, and he had found this location, and we got to talking, and we became partners, Lorenz Skeeter. And he said, let's do this. Let's open up a small joint. It's a 50-seat restaurant on, you know, in East Harlem on 111th between Park and Madison. But I could not be more excited. So I don't see it as something that's a difficulty. I see it as something that's exciting. And I don't stress out about it. I'm just excited to get it open. That's what I want. That's my anxiety. I just want to get it open. That's it.
Even with all the stuff that's thrown at you, whether it's permit or building delays, you find a way to take that in stride?
Listen, there have been, I mean, every little cliche that people told me that was going to happen to me times two, right? And then we've got this coronavirus, right, that's happening, right? And that's an issue too and all that. But, you know, external forces you cannot control. There's some things you just cannot control. And instead of just, like, complaining about them or letting it defeat you, you just have to learn how to work with it. And that's the bottom line. And that's what's happened. And I know that this coronavirus is not going to go away anytime soon. I'm fully clear on that. I've accepted that. But how can we make this still happen and still work? People still need to go out to eat, and people still need to be around each other. And that's
you and I discussed off air. You know, even a restaurant could provide takeout, delivery.
Absolutely.
So even in a trying time, absolutely, you could provide service.
For sure.
I know my wife is probably home listening and saying, why can't you be and think more like Yannick? Why can't you be more positive and upbeat and all that? All right. So the name of the place is?
The name of the place is called Contento. 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 And that means happy both in Spanish and Italian.
Okay.
But it also describes me, because I was trying to, you know, a word that I associate myself, and that's happy. But contento is also to pay homage to the old Italian immigrants of East Harlem. And then also this was the El Barrio. It still is. Right. It's still a good amount of Puerto Rican people that live there, and it's an homage to them. You know, I don't want to be that guy. Listen, I grew up in Hell's Kitchen. I kind of went through that whole phase of gentrification and all that, and I don't want to be that guy. I want to, like, make it, you know, I want this place to be open for everybody. I'm not looking for, like, you know, the young rich millennials to come in. I want this place to be built so everybody can come in. We've got housing projects around us. Like, I want those guys to come in. I mean, these doors are open for everybody. I want to make that very clear.
It's a neighborhood place.
Absolutely.
That skews to everyone.
100%.
In the neighborhood. Not just millennials who think coming uptown is cool.
No.
Old people who live there and come out three nights a week. It's for everybody.
Yeah.
Tell me about the concept. Let's talk food and wine first. And then I want to talk space.
First off, I think what's really important is to mention, you know, the chef. His name is Oscar Lorenzi. He's Peruvian, but, you know, his training, a lot of it is, you know, classically French trained. But this guy, he's so well connected. He's so passionate about this world of food and wine, by the way. He loves wine, and he knows a heck of a lot about wine. And so his background, that he worked as a chef at Marseille, at the Waverly Inn, at Nice Matin.
And, good places.
And the most important thing when we got together, I said to him, I said, are you the type of chef that just wants to stay in the kitchen, or are you the type of chef that's going to bring out the dishes and serve it to the guests? And he's like, that's what I'm going to be. I'm going to serve, you know,
that's
customers.
That's what you want.
And I said, great, that's it. And he's so easy to get along with, and I'm excited about it. I mean, he's just so, and he's great. His food is great, but his passion and who he is what really excites me.
He'll add to the whole.
He's going to add to
and
it.
And he'll be visible.
He's going to be visible. This is his coming out, for sure. This is his time.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll get some good notice and notices.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, how do you develop a wine program? I know you and him could sit down with the food and develop the menu and all that. But, you know, you're the wine guy supreme. You can't have everything because of the money and space and all that.
No.
What do you want to try to accomplish there?
Well, listen, at the beginning, we're going to have to be very realistic. You know, by the time the opening comes, we're not going to have a whole lot of money in our bank account. We're going to have some working capital.
Abolino.
But I think our rent is incredible. We have a very good, and when I say very good rent, listen, I'm a born and raised New Yorker, and I don't pay anything market value. Let me make that very clear, right? You know, some other people, they want to pay $40,000 for a space. That's, you know, you're already shooting yourself in the foot. That's not what we're trying to do. But the rent is very cheap. So with the wine list, I think what you're going to notice is it's going to be priced slightly above retail prices. We're going to do things like where I'm going to have a special reserve list of like maybe 20 different wines, and they're going to be marked up just like retail prices, you know, once a week, you know, so people can come in and they can have the opportunity to have perhaps like a Petit Chablis from Ravineau for X amount of money that we were allocated at. And it's not about making money, but it's giving people the opportunity to taste these wines or something interesting that no one sees. But but it's also the person serving the wines to add onto the experience along with the food of Oscar Lorenzi.
Sounds like a great experience. Sounds like value.
It's all, yes.
You know, it sounds like, you know, there's going to be a good diversity. But do you even know where you want to go? Does it lean French? Do you have to be American? I mean, it's whatever makes sense.
Yeah, no, listen, you know, my background's French. I love French food, but I think you're going to see an influence of some French dishes, not classical, but a play on those dishes.
Right.
Italian. You're going to see a heck of a lot of stuff of some Peruvian dishes,
too. Peru is a hot food
scene. It's unbelievable.
So here's a guy sort of on the cutting edge of what people are looking for.
And he's so involved. I mean, like, I've gone out with this guy many times, and can I tell you, the chefs come out, but it's not the chefs that just come out, it's the actual cooks that come out and say hello to him, and that to me says a lot. You know, when you see, you know, the line cooks who know, and he, because he's such a nice guy, but he's so enthusiastic, he wants to know about everything and everyone. And so that's what's really, so he's keeping relevant to what's happening with the change of cuisine, and that's what we want.
I was just going to say that fits into what you want to be seen as, what you want to present. All right, now, space-wise, here's your opportunity that you've been thinking about.
Correct.
I'm sure lying in bed looking up, going literally floor plans and stuff. So what can we expect, you know, when we walk in?
Well, I think from the naked eye, most people would not know that the restaurant was designed for a guy who's going to work as a sommelier or as a manager in a wheelchair, right? But, you know, the tabletops that I've made are specially designed for someone in a wheelchair so they can comfortably eat, you know, so that they're not obstructed by the actual table base, or the height of the table is too short, their knees are banging into it. There are going to be four seats at the bar that are counter seating, so people can eat at the bar and drinks if you want to just like stay in your wheelchair. Down the road, we're certainly working on it right now. I want to make sure that we have menus in Braille available. But as for myself, I can get around without any issue. And it's a small space. It's not a big space. It's
right.
A 50
you don't
seat
have this big canvas to work with.
We've been, you know, I'm blessed because the team that I work with, the team that I have assembled, they're completely supportive. And there were times where I'm like, well, you know what? Don't worry about it. We can put a few more tables over there. And like, no, we're not doing that because you need to be able to get around. We want you to get around. And this is what it's all about. So it's you know, again, how lucky am I to be able to work with such great people like that, that are willing to say, we don't need that one table there because...
Right. It's not about squeezing the money out.
Exactly.
Because if everything clicks, it'll be right. And
correct.
All
correct.
That, you know, the money.
That's right.
Are there... Listen, you've been around New York as much as me. Are there any places that even come close to that kind of thought?
I think the there are more and more. I mean, I think Charlie Bird does a pretty good job. You know, they have a great wheelchair wheelchair accessible bathroom, and just accessibility for that main floor is great. Corkbuzz Wine Studio, yes. Laura Mannix place is
But these are people that are thoughtful people too.
Very thoughtful people.
You know, Laura and Grant and all those guys at the other place.
They're great, you know. And so there's a lot of places like that. But there's not a place that you know, we're talking about diversity, right? So myself and my partner George Gallego, he's a paraplegic too. He's my partner. And then we have investors. We have two investors that are also full-time wheelchair users. So we have, I mean, talk about, this is one of a kind, really.
It is one of a kind.
I mean, I don't want to be known as the disabled-owned restaurant. That's not what I want to go by. But I think it's just something to keep in mind because, you know, most people, they box us into a category like, well, you should probably be working behind the desk or maybe become a lawyer, you know, disabled-friendly jobs. But here we are. I think the key to keep in mind is that we're really kind of opening the horizons, you know, that people with disabilities can do much more than just have a desk job, you know, because at the end of the day, you don't want to just work to have to work. Who wants to do that?
You want to have passion. You want to have passion. You know, and everything that you said talking about the restaurant before we talked at the end about your partners and, you know, the disabilities, it sounds like an amazing place. That's what it's about. It's about putting what you think is the best, most exciting opportunity under your, controls and all of that. So we're looking at approximately a May opening.
May opening. And we're also going to have a program there, too, during the day where we're going to have training programs. And it's going to be called the Disciples Canteen.
Okay.
And the Disciples Canteen is going to be a place for people with disabilities and those of minority backgrounds to come in and learn how the world of hospitality, cooking, nutrition, and all that, and give them the opportunity. Because some people, if you don't have the foot in the door, if you don't know the right people, how do you actually start? So hope this will be a place where they can actually get that mentorship and that networking.
Especially people of color.
Especially brown with people. Black. Absolutely.
You know, in that neighborhood, to promote that kind of environment. Absolutely. In that neighborhood. I think Absolutely. It's a terrific thing.
Absolutely.
You will keep me up on 100%. Specific openings. And, you know, I'll give a shout out when things are happening. So good luck to you.
Thank you.
Contento. I'm excited for you.
Thank
on
you
that.
So much.
All right. We got the last part of the show. I want to subject you to our wine list. You've done this once before. It's 5 questions. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you about your taste. Don't overthink these. Don't dwell on them. Just answer the freaking question. All right?
Okay. Fair enough.
So the first question is, what are you drinking now? Now, technically, we're drinking Israeli wine, but that also, what's in your fridge? What are you trying? What are you tasting? You know, seasonal. What's the now stuff for you?
Well, I'm a big fan right now of what's happening in Spain. There's okay. some really
so
cool...
Spain as a country. Now let's break it down a little in there.
There's a producer called Rodrigo Mendez.
M-E-N-D-E-Z.
He's out in Rías Baixas, making some stunning.
Rías Baixas is a very cool area for wine.
It's one of the prettiest places in the world. Okay. It's such a really cool place, you know. And then you've got these guys called Commando G, who are making.
Hotter than anything right now.
They're making like
young,
you know,
crazy guys, right?
Yeah, they're just making some stunning
fun labels with the big lettering and all that.
All of that good stuff. I mean, like, I just absolutely love. And then you have Laura Lorenzo, who's she's out in Riviera Sacra,
which is another cool region,
another cool place. This other he's a partner too as well in Ole, but Alberto Orte, he's using indigenous varietals. Making some really cool stuff, some great winemaking. But I mean, Spain is just something that I absolutely adore. And then I love wines from Valtellina, Northern Italy.
Okay, what are...
There's a producer out there.
Tell people the grapes first.
Yeah, so it's locally known, it's Nebbiolo, but locally known as Chiavenesca.
Okay.
And Valtellina is way up north. It's as north as you can get in the Lombardy region. It's probably about a 2-hour drive, maybe a little bit more from Milan. And it's just east on the northern tip of Lake Como, okay? And it's the most spectacular...
So great place to visit.
Unbelievable.
Incredible wines. Sounds like a home run.
Yeah, and...
the food's pretty good.
One of my favorite visits, me and Heidi went to visit them, I think it was 2 years ago. It's called... Produced two young guys called DeRupi.
Spell.
D-I-R-U-I-P-I. I believe that's his call.
Okay, I'll double check.
But they're making some really cool stuff, and I think that in their passion and they're just really fun guys to be around. But spectacular place. Absolutely love it.
So those are some good ones. So big shout out to Spain. Valtellina, any other place?
Listen, I've got to show love to, you know, New York too as well. There's some great stuff in New York happening, you know, particularly in the Finger Lakes. Nancy Ireland, she's a great winemaker, world-class winemaker over at Redtail Ridge. You have Ravines, and then of course you have Vemer, which is always a standout.
They've been around,
you know, for a long time. That I think they're doing a great job. And I always love Pominock from out east of Long Island. Yeah, Kareem, the Masood family. They're doing a fabulous job. Yeah,
they need Long Island needs a little love. They're starting to come into a stride.
I think they're starting to figure out their climate, and they're planting grapes that are appropriate, and they're doing a great job. I've always loved Pominock.
All right, let's keep moving. Your parents were French, restaurant business, you've been in it, favorite wine and food pairing. It's probably got to be something when the whole family's sitting around, and it's just right. Yeah. I mean, you don't eat it every night or even every, but what's the classic? Not what you think is, but what you enjoy as a favorite wine and food pairing.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think in general, like a juicy Beaujolais, you know, I mean, Chateau du Moulin-Avant, which gave me a little bit more serious, is a great property down in Moulin-Avant and in Beaujolais. But, you know, something like Beaujolais is always a great little pairing with pâtés and charcuterie. You know, that's what I like to eat. Simple food, simple products and all that.
I love that.
Juicy Garnacha from Spain. I mean,
it fits the same bill for
exactly,
that.
Exactly.
Those are good ones. All right. Favorite wine, restaurant, and or bar? I run into this every now and then because you don't want to leave anyone out.
No, of course.
But there are a couple of people, I'm asking you to mention a few, not pick your favorites,
right. That
has the selection, the passion,
yeah, sure.
The food, the list.
Sure.
You know, you walk in and you go, this is easy.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Caleb Ganser is doing over
at Company is a show favorite.
I just went over for the first time over to La Lu, which is owned by Joe Campanelli, who's like
used to do a show.
What a gentleman and what the nicest guy in the world.
He's got it going there, right?
He's got it going on, you know, for sure.
Mentioned Charlie Bird earlier.
Charlie Bird, I mean, they're all doing great, you know, for sure. I think Laura Manick, you know, always keeps
Cork
it up.
Buzz.
You know, with Cork Buzz, always super reliable, always super consistent, you know, always kind of changing it up. And those would be sort of my go-to places.
Those are what answers the question properly.
But I will say there are two places that I absolutely love to go to. One is the classic in Paris called Willy's Wine Bar. I always have to go there.
In Paris,
Willy's Wine Bar is called.
So if you want the classic, typical Parisian wine bar, Willy's.
Willy's Wine Bar is called.
Give me the other one.
And then the other one in Chablis, which I have some of the best food. It's called Oufil du Zinc.
Spell.
A-U, second word, F-I-L, third word, Oufil du Zinc. D-U, and then last
Z-I-N-C.
Word, that's it. And it's unbelievable. It's like the best steal in the world. That's incredible.
All right. So I forgot to tell everyone, I post all these answers.
Okay.
I will post Yannick's wine list. You know, it'll be available like I do everyone else. All right. Second to last question. Favorite all-time wine? The question was originally designed like, hey, Yannick, what was the most expensive rare wine? That's not the question anymore. Right. What's the wine that was important to you? You know, maybe it's something Heidi first date or the first time you met. Because I remember your story. There were a couple of wines that really, really influenced you, you know, when you were younger.
Sure.
How do you answer that question?
Okay, so I will just go very quickly. I had a great 1974 by Marcus d'Angerville. That was just singing at La Pole. So that was so far the wine of the of
this recent La Pole. Like a 74. Which one?
It was the Clos de Duc.
Clos de Duc,
which was just absolutely singing.
74. Jesus.
One of my favorites of all time that still stays is the 66 Vega Sicilia Unico.
Is that considered one of the great vintages?
I mean, yeah.
Not like a 61 Petrus.
It's a fairly good vintage.
It's important to you.
But when I opened that up, it was that just really just kind of. But the wine that really meant a lot to me that I remember was the first bottle of wine that I had opened up after my car accident. And that was Joseph Roti, the Gevrey Chambertin, 2008. just straight Chevrolet Chambertin Vieille-Vigne 2000 vintage, which was just like, imagine not tasting any wine or alcohol for 5 to 6 months. And then all of a sudden, this explosion. Because at that moment, when it was my first day back home, I said, gosh, what am I going to do? I was depressed. I was down in the dumps. And that stimulation of that wine reinvigorated me and said, no, I have to figure this out. I have to get back into the game. I cannot give up.
That's how you answer that question. When you ask somebody favorite all-time wine, and I've explained every show that it's morphed to what's an important wine.
Right.
That's how you – if we were giving an award for the best answer, that
would. Thank you.
All right, last question, and you certainly could handle this. Best wine around $15-$20 retail. Recommend a red and a white. I always say my kids are in their 20s. They're going to a party. They can't bring crap supermarket wine for $9. They can't afford 40. So what's 15, 20, 22 bucks? A red and a white. You could go category white, Muscadet. Yeah, you can go maker.
Yeah.
Give me one of each.
I'm going to just keep it general so it'll make it easier for you.
That's fine.
You know, but definitely whites right now, you can still find some. I mean, with the Rio Specious, and we're talking about Albarino, and I don't want to stick on that. But between Albarino and then also Vino Verde, they over-deliver great. You can find some great bottles of wine for 10, 11, 12 bucks. They're low in alcohol. They're quaffable, and they can go with just about anything. Great white wine. For a red wine, I still think, you know, Côte d'Huron is still where it's at. It's always consistent. It's spicy. It's meaty. It's got the complexity. You've got to get the right producer, but they're there. They're out there. They're out there to be had for
and
sure.
Right in that price range.
Right in that price range.
All right. So I will post those answers, and that's where you go into Ledoux and say, I spend $20 for a Côte d'Huron, you know, and he'll go, I got a couple.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You rely on your guy. All right. We have a few minutes left.
Sure.
I didn't make you schlep wines for the sake of schlepping them.
Yes.
But you brought in a couple of Israeli wines. The first wine, let's talk about it quickly.
So the first one that we have is a winery called Kishor Vineyards.
K-I-S-H-O-R.
Got it. You got it. Right.
Is there one wine growing region in Israel?
There's a couple. Yeah, there's the Galilee.
Where's Kishor?
Both of these wines that I'm going to feature are from the Galilee. So that's way up north, right on the Mediterranean, high altitude vineyards. They can go anywhere from 500 meters up to 1,000, right? And then you have the Golan Heights, and then you have the Judean Hills, which is also pretty amazing, rich in limestone. The first one that I'm pouring you over here is Sauvignon Blanc with some Viognier in it. These vineyards were planted about in 2007, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, they're young, but the winemaker here, his name is Richard Davis. But what's really cool about this project, why I wanted to show it to you, first off, it is a kosher wine. But one thing that I learned about, we have to get rid of that stigmatization that if a wine's kosher, it means bad. Absolutely not. All it is that the actual wine is being made under the observation of someone that has a religious
supervision.
And people got to get out of it. Right. So Kishor, what's really great about this winery, everyone that works at this winery, except for the higher ups, like when I say higher ups, I mean the winemaker, they all have cognitive mental disabilities. So all those that are cutting the grapes that are out in the vineyards, it's a cool project. It's
so
a kibbutz.
They're providing jobs and opportunities.
And it's a village. They're making their own bread. They're making their own food. It's a cool place. It's completely inspiring. So what I was talking about being sustainable, you're buying this wine, you're getting something quite good, but you also know that your money is going to a good place. So that's, this is just an amazing project.
Leave it to you to find a wine. So Kishor, this is the 2018 white.
Yes.
What's a good pairing for a wine like this?
Shellfish. Aperitif.
Wait, shellfish ain't kosher.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
I'm joking. Yeah, but so shellfish, pate?
Pates that you can do, you know, simple, I mean, salads, you know, freshly picked vegetables, and, you know, tomatoes with the cucumbers, anything like that. It's a simple wine, but it offers a lot, you know.
What's approximate retail?
This one, that's a good question. I think it goes retail about $20 to $25.
Okay, yeah. I'll double check it. All right, we got a couple of minutes just
one more.
To taste.
And this is the opposite end of this. And what I mean by that is that this is a small grower producer. The guy's name is Gabby Sedan. This is Shvo Vineyards, S-H-V-O. Gabby Sedan.
Shvo.
Yeah, exactly. So he planted these vines in 2010. So you've got to keep in mind, the Israeli wine industry is fairly young. But this is a blend of majority Syrah with some Grenache, Mauvetre, and some Barbera in it. It's nice. It's spicy. It's fresh. You know, this guy is hands-on. Completely sustainable. It's not a natural wine, but nothing's been added to it. I think it's absolutely fascinating.
It's good 2016, practices.
Good practices. But what I wanted to show to you is to show you that there are winemakers out there like Gabby right now who are up and coming and who are really taking – there's some amazing terroir out there. Mostly you see an incredible limestone out there, some gravel. There's a lot happening in Israel, slowly but surely.
So it needs a second look.
It needs a second
look. It requires some of your attention, and there's some diversity there. Just the blend in this red alone is not what people think about Israeli wines.
He worked under Domaine Dujac for a couple of years.
So he's got the chops.
He knows it, yeah.
So I will post these wines
thank you.
And the makers. I'll double check with you. All right, Yannick, thank you for bringing those
thank
wines
you so much.
In. I didn't mean to rush
no,
through
it's okay,
the
it's
wines.
No, it's okay. Please, thank you for having me.
They will live... on the website with some detail. All right, we got to wrap up. If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Subscribe to the Grape Nation podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Follow us on Facebook at The Grape Nation, on Instagram at SBenRuby, and on Twitter at BenRuby. You could always use the hashtag The Grape Nation. We'll post Yannick's wine list. We'll post the weekly wine sips, that we drank from Israel. Yannick, let's just go over this one more time. If we want more information about the upcoming Wine on Wheels, go to Wheeling.
No, go wineonwheels.org. www.wineonwheels.org.
The way it sounds. And that is April...
April 4th, Saturday, April 4th.
Coming up in a few weeks. Yeah. And there are tickets still available. Some great experiences. We'll keep you up on Contento. We're looking at somewhere around May, we hope.
Yep.
And if we want to follow you and your follies on social media, it's at Yannick Benjamin, right?
At Yannick Benjamin. Yep, exactly.
All right. I want to thank my friend Yannick Benjamin.
Thank you.
For coming in. And I'm always happy to discuss the great stuff that you're doing. I will check back with you and keep up on everything. I will see you at Wine on Wheels. Thank you to everyone at Heritage Radio. Thanks to our engineer, Amanda. I'm Sam Benrubin. You've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. The Grape Nation is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.